Hello, friends. Oh, now this is, oh yeah, we always have to do the, I even wore heels. I'm glad that this group reads those last two paragraphs because it's never my intention to offend anybody, but invariably whatever comes out of my mouth is going to come out of my mouth. And I thought of, well, I'm a gratitude girl. That's the thing. See, so many of you already know me that some of this is going to be like, yeah, we know that. But anyway, I'm a gratitude girl, and God has influenced a lot of, well, pretty much everything that goes on. But I didn't always recognize both of those things. But the miracle that happened today, really small things make me happy. I was putting on a little makeup to come here, and I said, I don't have to have a drink to get ready to go somewhere. And then the brain starts going. And I said, gosh, I'm not going to be driving drunk to get to where I'm going. And when I walk in, I don't have to survey the room and try to decide what you want me to be. What chameleon do I have to be today for this group? I just get to be me and share what has worked for me so far. September 24th, 2007 is when this all began. And I've had the privilege of speaking from the podium several times, and the only time when I felt it was not a good experience was when I tried to run the show. And it was fairly early on, and I had my little flashcards, and I had practiced in my head, and God had really different plans for me that night of what I was going to share, and I felt awful. That ego deflation, it was a wonderful thing because it taught me a lesson. On the way here in the car, and I'm not going to lie, I'm a little vain, flip down the mirror, make sure everything's okay, and say, all right, God, here we go. Guide me. And that's been my experience. So I tend to tell my story through the progression of the steps because it gives me focus, and I happen to need that. But first, I'll explain a little bit of what my qualifier is. I drank to get drunk. I didn't know that's what I did. I drank because it felt good. I liked it. And I didn't know that you could stop. I didn't want to stop. Why would I stop? Because I could breathe. It was the one thing that worked that let me take a deep breath and just breathe. And sometimes I was the fun party girl. Sometimes I was a hateful witch. It just depended on the day, but it all started out with being able to breathe. And there was so much I learned, and my perspective changed from the day I walked in to each progression of my life. My perspective has changed, and I don't believe any of them were wrong at the time. You only know what you know. Or don't know in my case. And I didn't know that everybody didn't have blackouts. I truly didn't. And so they didn't alarm me. The only thing that alarmed me was when people would fill in the blanks. I didn't really like that because it seemed the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde happened pretty early. And I didn't have my first drunk until I was in college. Not that I didn't have my first drink. And so now, studying the steps and studying our literature over and over, I do know that this is an obsession of the mind. And I can distinctly remember sitting with my favorite grandpa, and he had a beer every night, and he would give me a sip. And I don't remember like lights going off and feeling great and everything. What I remember is I got to spend time with him. It was like our time together. And there was that feeling of belonging. And later it was with him teaching me how to count cards and do different things, but it was always that time together. And so the occasional sip of beer didn't mean anything to me other than belonging in that moment. And then as I grew up, I'm not from an alcoholic family. My mom, she still does this today. If she drinks I don't know. I don't even watch her. A couple of drinks, let's say. Her clue is she'll go, "Oh, I'm feeling my nose." Like, what does that have to do with anything? Okay. And she'll stop. She'll stop drinking because she doesn't like that feeling that her nose is tingling. I'm like, "Whoa, I don't get that." And then my dad gets very expansive. Like he starts flinging his arms and his voice gets loud. And so to me, alcohol looks stupid. I mean, literally, when I thought people who drink just look stupid. And so I never wanted to look stupid. Well, we know how that goes. But anyway, that wasn't the goal. But when I went to college, pretty studious kid, and I had that feeling of being on the outside looking in, partly because of my age, but also because I would hear of people getting trashed. Oh, I got trashed on the weekend. Oh, went to a kegger on the weekend. And I just didn't know what they were talking about. But I didn't want to look stupid, Miss Control Freak here. I decided I would have a controlled drunk. And I went over this guy's house who I knew liked me. And I told him what the plan was. And the only thing he had in his house was plum wine. To this day, even that plum wine, that just makes my stomach icky. And so anyway, drank, I think, a lot of it. I don't know. But I ended up locked in his bathroom, had puked everywhere, passed out, woke up, maybe a little embarrassed. I don't remember that. But what I do remember is thinking, I don't have time for this right now. I'm taking a full load working, but I'm doing this again. We're just going to change the circumstances next time. And that was at 18 years old that I knew I don't have time for this right now, but and move along into a marriage. And yeah, we'll get into that later. But anyway, some of my more creative drinking happened during that time. And here's the thing. I have been very fortunate that the obsession to drink has been taken away, but the obsession to feel differently hasn't. And so when life happens, and a lot of life has happened to me this past year, when life happens, I want to feel differently. Now, luckily, my AA family, the wagons have circled me, and I know that I'm loved. I certainly sometimes want to feel differently. But anyway, let's pop forward to what happened. The drunkalogs, so I find drunkalogs entertaining, but for me, that's not my purpose. You know, my purpose, yeah, I want to let you guys know I was a drunk mom. Am I proud of that? No, but I want to say it because it took me a long time to say it. And there's other young mothers out there that probably feel that very deep, and maybe dads too, you're not trying to leave anybody out, feel that deep shame that I felt for driving drunk with my child, for missing his high school graduation, for lots of things in between that happened. But those details, those things I share with another woman one-on-one. Because if that is part of their story that they are striving to have relief from, I can share that, how that happened with me. So I don't spend too much time on the drunk log, but it'll be an interwoven in there. What happened? So I landed in the emergency room in Manassas, and a friend took me there. I was going into convulsions. And there's a nurse that if she was standing right in front of me, I wouldn't be able to identify her. But she said, she took my hands. I remember that. And she said, "Will you let us help you?" And up till then, I was a fighter. I like to fight, you know. I mean, I can do this. Damn it, I just have to figure it out. And that day I didn't have any fight. And my friend wrote me a letter later that said something about that in there. She said, It was like all the steam went out of the train, and I had never in 20 years that I knew you ever saw that happen. And it was like, okay, help me. Now, little did I know that that help meant they were going to load me in a van and take me to a behavioral science unit. And oh Lord, one of my biggest fears was being a nutcase and going to the nut house. And yeah, there I was. Whoops. But anyway, I really wasn't paying attention to that. I was more alarmed with the razor wire that was around the top. And when I went in, they were doing the intake. And pardon me. And I was scared out of my mind, and I felt like H-E-double-L. And here's this woman asking me questions, and she said, do you hear voices? And I thought, this is a trick. You know, I hadn't gone through the doors that slammed behind you yet. And so I asked her, I said, are you talking to me right now? And she nodded. And I was like, yes, I hear right now. I hear you. And I just knew I had passed that test. Well, that wasn't what she was asking. So when I went in, I was scared to death. There were people, they were just frightening, and I was scared. And I don't like being scared and not being able to leave. But on the third or fourth day, I found out I could leave because I signed myself in. I could sign myself out. And so even one of the other, I start to say inmates, residents, he said to, and he was a chronic relapser, and he said to me, don't do it. Take advantage of everything they have to offer. And I'm like, nope, gotta go. And so they had recommended AA, and I was, oh, okay, sign, sign, sign. And away I went. And so what I didn't realize, of course, until I got in here, was when you take the alcohol away, I was still stuck with me. And me is full of anxiety and full of wanting to, not so much anymore, but be perfect, because now I believe I'm perfectly imperfect. Thank you. And after about 2 weeks, my stomach started getting that anxious feeling of, I need to feel differently. I don't even remember what was going on, but I need to feel differently. And it scared me. And so I said, okay, they said go to an AA meeting. And so for 2 weeks, I drove around and parked outside AA meetings. It was good, you know, and I watched people come in, and I have the quality of being judgmental. Yes, I do. And every single person that went in, I was sure, it's like, don't look like her. No, don't look like him. And it took me 2 weeks. And then on a Tuesday over in Orange, in the middle of the day, people, of course, you know, were coming from work and different places, and everybody looked normal. And I thought, okay, fine. And I went in, and for the first year, I cried. I mean, I cried and cried and cried and cried. I carried so much shame, so much guilt, so much why me, you know, pity pot, et cetera. And actually, on my first anniversary, one of my sober sisters bought me the Costco size thing of tissues and gave it to me and said that they were tired of spending their seventh tradition money on tissues, and I needed to bring my own from then on. But yeah, I got sober with some tough cookies, but I love every one of them. Anywho, so let me see. First step, powerless over alcohol. My life had become unmanageable. That was the second part of it. I just couldn't get, because, well, really the first part too, but the second part in particular, because I did not have this wild, great story. I didn't get a DUI. I still had the man, a house, a decent car, all of that. Now I know for me, that was by the grace of God, because I should have had DUIs and I should have had this and I should have had that and all of that stuff. But the world unfolded the way it did. And there in the beginning, I felt again like I didn't fit in because at that time, there were some kind of fantastical stories coming in from the jails and things. And I thought, well, maybe I'm not enough of an alcoholic. And that's our cunning, bafflingly, and powerful disease talking right there. And so luckily, I feel it's important to say that from the podium because I did not hear my story for I think I was like 4 years sober. And the lady who would become my third sponsor, she said that was her opening line. I have a very boring story. And I kind of sat up and went, tell me, so how did you feel differently? Because that was really important to me. I had to find something that was going to let me breathe and not be on edge all the time. So anyway, I don't recommend waiting, but I probably was 3, 4 months sober before I got a sponsor. And I believe strongly in sponsorship. I've had a slew of them. And the reason I asked this lady to sponsor me, I don't know that it was that she had something that I wanted. I don't think I realized that concept yet. But we talked in the parking lot afterwards. And she said something to me about herself that I immediately had that little judgmental going on. And I went, wow, this is the one. She won't be able to judge me because that was wild. And I really picked her because I was so fearful and my ego was ugh, of just being judged. And because I had been judged in my life. And yeah, so that was that. So anyway, she was quite the sailor potty mouth person, but she was very direct and loving and kind. And she was my foundation person for the first 6.5 years. And she took me through the steps, and she was very good at judging when to back off and when to let me have a little rope to maybe learn a lesson and all of those things. But she was the one that introduced me to the gratitude list. And anyone who knows me knows that 17 and change later, I do a daily gratitude list because I found what it did, and this was her purpose, was it was going to change my thinking. I had to send it to her every day. And so I was looking for stuff, knowing I had to send this to her. And so I'd be outside, okay, I haven't, what's happened to nothing. And then it was like, okay, fine. The sun shone today for 15 minutes. I mean, it was literally, I was looking, looking, looking. And eventually it just kind of started infiltrating my life where when positive things would happen, there it was. It was like, oh, I can actually be grateful for this. And I've never, I don't think I internalized that I'm grateful to be an alcoholic. What I'm grateful for is there is a solution which has worked for me. That's what I'm grateful for. The disease of alcoholism, took me to places that I didn't necessarily want to go. And the thing that has saved me is the package of AA, the program, the literature, the fellowship, just all of it, meetings, 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 sponsoring women, being sponsored. It's the package that has saved me. And so what got me here, yes, but I don't think I'm still ready to say. And so Lori, first sponsor, would always introduce herself as a grateful alcoholic. I'm like, I don't think I'm ever going to get that one. Well, I'm closer to it. So, time takes time. So anyway, we went through the steps and the second step, that one. Again, I went to a meeting and I said, I've got God and you're not it. And so everybody politely laughed and tried to tell me what that was about, that it wasn't religion or anything of that sort. But I was offended by the word sanity, because to restore me to sanity meant that I was insane. How quickly I had forgotten that I was in the razor wire, slam doors, what have you. And so, what I have had to do, I had to do it then. I do have a connection with God. But what I continue to have to do sometimes is use the group as a higher power, something bigger than me. When, pardon me, when I'm wrapped around the axle, or anything else for that matter, I don't zen out. I don't reach for yoga. I don't immediately say, oftentimes say, God help me. I'm too busy up here. And I'll go to a meeting and ask, how did you do it? How did you do this? And if there's 10 people there, there will be 10 different ways. And there might even be one that says, I don't know. I haven't had that happen. That's something else I learned to say, I don't know. And so that second step was and continues to be so very important to me, because what I find is I reach for that daily, because I can move into the insanity, not of wanting a drink, but of not living with a comfortable mind. That's probably the easiest way to put it. And then, so step three, well, she had me on step three for almost a full year. I was apparently very good with taking my will back. And the whole fishing pole analogy of, I turn it over and throw the pole out and bring it back in. And so what happened was, I guess I was coming right up at a year. And again, parking lot, we had some of our best fights in the parking lot, or arguments. They weren't fights, arguments. And I had my hands on my hips and I said, are you ever going to let me do the fourth step? And she started laughing, and she kind of cackled, and she started laughing, and she said, now you're ready. Well, be careful what you wish for sometimes, right? But anyway, during, let's see, the four step, 4, 5 months. Okay, so at 6 months sober, I went to, with my husband, yeah, we weren't married yet. It doesn't matter. We went to New Zealand and Australia, and she had me look up all of the meetings ahead of time. And that was interesting, because they were far, far away. Like there weren't around here. We're actually pretty lucky, even though we don't have tons and tons of meetings. You can drive to them, but they were spread out. But I was really committed. And plus, we stayed in bed and breakfast the whole time. And every night there'd be a bottle of wine from the owners, And I have to say, I'm kind of grateful that I stopped drinking later, because I don't have any of that. I wish I would have tried, because I think I tried it all, really, or most of it. But anyway, we got back. We went to New Zealand, went to Australia. We got back, and we were back just a couple of weeks, and he had a hemorrhagic stroke. And here I am, 6 months sober, not knowing what to do. She was of the variety that I had had to call her every day. And what that instilled in me was I had her number memorized. And I had a car phone at the time. Car, bank phones, all of that. I had a car phone and called her while following the ambulance down to UVA. I don't remember the conversation. I just remember that I was connected with somebody. I didn't know what to do. I wanted to feel differently. And so she talked me all the way there. My spiritual experience of when I knew, I couldn't have told you right then, it's hindsight, everything's hindsight, that I knew that the obsession had been removed was they were going to drill into his brain. We weren't married yet, and I had to go home, come home, to get the medical power of attorney and all of that stuff that doctors need. And I was in the house, and the bottle of bourbon was there. My husband drank very responsibly, kind of irritatingly so. And but when I quit drinking, I did say, I'm not trying to change him. And so it was there. And the fact that I didn't drink, didn't reach for it, didn't have to fight about it, you know, in my internally, that was a miracle. And that's when it was, I knew it had been taken away from me, because I assure you, I would never have made it to the surgery the next morning. I would have had just a little to get through the night, because I'm going to have to sleep, you know, and then and then get up there, and that none of that happened. I was able to show up and be present. And so that was, you know, all of this was early sobriety, early stuff. And the first year stinks anyway. I'll just tell you, I almost wouldn't take a drink again just to not have to go through the first year again, because it's just a lot of discovery, a lot, you know, all of this is, it helped me figure out who I was. And some of it I liked and some of it I didn't, but I'm free to make choices today and to be the woman I believe that God wants me to be today. So let me see here. 2 years sober is when I got married. Again, I looked to the fellowship because I didn't know how to do that sober. I had a marriage where I was drunk, and a marriage which I would love to blame it all on him. I really would. To this day, I'd love to blame it on him. I am not going to lie. But, you know, it wasn't really fair that I married him to tick off my parents. And I really did marry him just for that. When my mom, I'm sidetracking, but when my, we got engaged after knowing each other like 2 weeks. And somehow I decided that he still needed to meet my mother. And she did everything short of doing that on her forehead when she met him. And when we were there, I turned to him and said, oh yes, I will marry you. And we got married like 2 months later, and amazingly 13 years stayed together. But it, you know, the later steps, it really opened my eyes to, when you go into things with bad intentions or wrong intentions, things usually don't turn out well. And I can take that into mostly anything in my life. So fourth step, what a revelation. I was mad at everybody. It just kills me when I get sponsees that say, well, I'm really not resentful at anyone. Oh my gosh. I went all the way back to my second grade teacher. And this woman, Mrs. Christensen, God rest her soul, I know she has to be dead because she was 142 at the time. She was so, my perspective, so mean. At recess, you were supposed to go to the bathroom at recess. No, recess is for playing. That's Monique's perspective. Came back in. I can even tell you what I was wearing. Little velvet dress, shirt with a little pinafore collar, Mary Jane shoes, the whole shebang. I raised my hand. I have to go to the restroom. This is second grade. And she said, no, you should have done that at recess. And I felt it. It's the same thing I feel now when I get mad. It starts here and it like moves up my neck, and the squinty eyes come, and it's like, I'm going to get you. It's that whole process. And so I went up and peed next to her desk. Yep. Did not care that everybody was laughing at me. Didn't care that I got sent to the principals. Didn't care that I got suspended. What I cared about was when I saw my mother with fire coming out of her nose coming up the school drive. And it was in that moment that I had, oh man, I'm in trouble. So that's the way my alcoholic, I'm telling you, I didn't know then, but in hindsight, I can always see, I won't go into the details, but I got suspended in fifth grade. I got suspended in seventh grade. And it always had to do with being right. And I will tell all of you guys, some of my friends know, I won't even look at them, I still like to be right. Mm-hmm. I really do. And that whole, do you want to be right? Do you want to be happy? I am happy when I'm right. And the thing which has changed my thinking in that is an old timer said, do you want to be right or do you want to be sober? Mm-hmm. And that was like, oh, okay, well. Suck it up, sister. And so anyway, that kind of changed things. But back to getting married. So I get married. By this time, we'd already lived together, I want to say like 16 years or so. And he saw me through the good, the bad, the ugly. I'll always be grateful for all of that. You know, we were a partnership. But I looked to the group to how to get sober. And let me see here. Fifth step. We're entirely ready for God. Is that right? Oh, admitted to God. I was like, wait a minute, that's not right. Admitted to God the exact nature of our wrong. So with, I was anxious to do it, went over to Lori's house. She was a smoker. She's smoking along. She had a little Cavalier dog that I petted and petted and petted and petted. And we got through it. And I was ready for the skies to open, the angels to sing. That's what I thought was going to happen. And I got in the car and nothing was happening. What happened with a little time is that I quit looking over my shoulder. I wasn't afraid every time I saw somebody that I wasn't sure if it was a blackout situation. Particularly, one of the things I have to admit, I don't even like it today when it's like, didn't we meet? I was like, oh, I don't want to know. And so anyway, I did that with her and it was freeing, but not in the way that I anticipated. Then with six character defects and having things entirely removed, I straight out of the book, I didn't want things entirely removed. Some of my character defects were useful. And to this day, I only know of one that has been removed. I hope it doesn't come back. I don't know how that all works in the big universe. But the only reason I know, I prayed for 2 years, two solid years for this one defect to go away. And I'm sure it was offensive to everybody else, but it was bothering me. I was very dismissive of anyone who I felt was wasting my time. And I mean, to the point, sometimes I would even with my hand, like, and I knew, I mean, I would, it was almost like this other person was going, why are you doing that? Because I don't want people to do it to me. And I prayed for two solid years for this to be taken away. Show me what to do. Give me something different to insert, whatever. Well, I had a situation where I really needed to, the big eye here, I needed to dismiss this person, tell them all about themselves before dismissing them. And that thing I told you that creeps up my neck was happening and it wouldn't come. It's like, oh my gosh, the best that I could do, it was a different version of this, is bless her, heal me. And that has saved my bacon. I still use bless them, heal me. Because fancy long prayers sometimes they're just not available to me. Keep it short, keep it simple. So since that's the only one I know has been removed, I feel like I kind of had job security in AA and keep coming back and keep that connection going and what have you. Now the making the list of people we had harmed, that was another one that really tapped into my embarrassment and shame. Because I was very good at, oh, what I said earlier, you tick me off, I'm gonna get you. And so it would show up in all mannerisms and even in sobriety. I'll start with sobriety and maybe work backwards a little bit. My first service position in Orange was to make cakes for everybody's anniversary. And I was given that task because I wouldn't talk to anybody. I wouldn't talk. As soon as we did the amen, I was out that door. I didn't want to be one of you guys. I was going to keep coming back until I figured out what the secret was. And so Lori gave me that little calendar, said, walk around, find out everyone's anniversary, what kind of cake they like. Okay, fine. So I did that. And one of the first people was a man who has passed away now, who was a cranky old person. And he, from my very first meeting, I just think he hated people. I really do. Well, I cried all the time anyway, but he made me cry, which that didn't feel good. And I just was so stubborn. I was going to come back because he made me cry, right? Well, anyway, his birthday was coming up. And Anne Marie, some of you knew Anne Marie, she's passed away. She had the job before me and was a very good baker, by the way. But anyway, so Bill wanted a German chocolate cake. Fine, not the easiest cake to make. So I'm already building myself up. And get to the day, I give him his cake with a pasted on smile, I'm sure. He takes a bite and he says, well, Anne Marie made better cakes. Yep. So I spent the whole meeting plotting how to get Ex-Lax into his cake the next year. I mean, for real. I couldn't, it just, and it taught me the best lesson. It really did. That it didn't matter. It didn't matter. And boy, when you can get to a place of, oh, they call that acceptance. That's right. When you can get to a place of that it just doesn't matter. And I didn't want him in my head. It went away. But it took that ugly lesson for me to learn that. And so anyway, my amends to him was, I didn't have the job the next year, so I didn't make him a cake. But no, my first, so doing the amends process with a sponsor, I believe, is vital. Where it talks about in the book about using prudence, good judgment, something else. I focused on those two because I didn't have good judgment. I wanted what I wanted to get this over with, get the monkey off my back, etc. And there was one person in particular that I did on purpose some financial harm to, and I just wanted, he was at our house all the time, and I wanted to get this monkey off my back because I knew I was going to see him 4 or 5 days a week. I mean, ugh. Anyway, friend of my husband's, and she told me, you're nowhere. You're just leave this alone. You can make an amends to him, but just not yet. You're nowhere near. This was in that first year. And so he came by to visit my husband, wasn't home yet. And so he's in the kitchen. I was coming up on a year or right around there. And I thought, again, I inserted myself here. This is perfect. Nobody's here. We're by ourselves. I have a year sober, I can do this. And so I spilled my intent behind it. I spilled all of it. Of course, not having done this step yet, pretty early on, he looked at me, and I won't say it in church, but it begins with an F, and said, blank you. And I was like, oh, this is not going well. And he turned around and walked out of my house. And I was baffled. I didn't know what had happened, because I had this expectation and this kind of like doing that fifth step with the angels and the skies opening up. I had this expectation that everything was going to be better. And so about half an hour later, he came back in the house and he said, you know, and I didn't know he had been in AA. I never knew that, because he didn't still go. He said, you know, I carried my 24-hour chip in my pocket for the whole first year. And I did my steps with a sponsor. And you don't even know what the eighth step is. You don't know what the ninth step is. And he just kind of laid it out. And he was right. He was right. So when I was 3 years sober or so, we were having a little barbecue at the house, not because of the sober part, just we were having it. But I remember this because he came over, like I said, friend of my husband's, came over and he walked into the kitchen and he reached his hand out to shake my hand, which is weird. But anyway, I went to shake his hand and his 3-year medallion was in the palm of his hand that he was giving to me. And at that time, I knew the amends was done. There was nothing else to do. It didn't matter that I financially hurt him. He was stinking rich. That's not what mattered to him. What mattered was he was paying attention that I was working the steps, that I was trying to make it right, that I was, you know, doing what we strive to do. And we never talked about it again. That was that. And so I always kept his 3-year medallion meant a lot to me. So I, you know, when I got through the list with eight and Lori checked off some things, she's like, no, you're going to leave them alone. And other people, and then some people, we had to find creative ways to do that. Got through that. And I am very glad that I don't fear when people say, I don't fear running into people. In fact, I was working in Culpeper and one of our old commanders and his wife walked into my place of business. They were our commanders he was the commander in Germany. I did a lot of creative drinking in Germany. I love the military, by the way. They will teach you how to drink if that's your goal. But anyway, why they were in Culpeper, Virginia, they were from Ohio or whatever, and they had decided to retire. They thought it was such a cute little community. Your amends that need to be made, or mine, I can only speak of mine, they will show up. You know, so being willing, that is a key to that step, is just being willing to do them. I didn't do them the first day. I was in too much shock, but I was able to do it later. Step 10. So that step 10, I can say probably saved my marriage a couple of times with the whole immediacy thing, but working, being immediately accountable for when I know my behavior has been less than stellar, it really is very freeing. And it helps. I like pie. I just don't like humble pie. And it helps with all of that. And I recently had to use it even. Neighbor came over there and their dog, they never locked their dog up. And big dog followed him and this dog jumped on my dog. And it's that awful sound of when two dogs are like. And I got in the middle of them, punched his dog in the face, and was cussing like I didn't even realize I knew some of those words, and cussing at the man, get his, you know what, dog out of there, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We got the dog separated. Everything was fine. And I knew that I will re if I am in a corner, I will react as if I don't have an ounce of sobriety. I have proven that. And this was just like a month ago. And immediacy wasn't in the first like 10 minutes. It took me a little bit, but then I did apologize for the way that I spoke to him and was screaming at him and the language I was using. And he just kind of nodded. And that was that. Like, that's the thing. I don't have to carry it. I don't have to go and start justifying, well, his big dog attacked my little dog. And, because that's what I did. That's how I drank. I justified things until, well, they could have been true or imagined, but I would believe them. That's the point. I would believe them. And once they got to a level of, that's why I get to drink because of that. So the immediacy of the 10th step, I really, really appreciate that. 11th step, this is where I find my peace. I don't hang up the phone with God, whatever you call your higher power, I don't care. I don't. I'm not trying to convince you to have mine even. I just am telling you what has worked for me. I like having conversations. It brings brings me great peace. Sorry. Whew. Anyway, brings me great peace. And the conscious contact, what it does for me is it kind of sets my day because I ask every day, I ask for help to be useful to another human being and to be the woman that I am supposed to be today. And I just don't always know what that looks like. Oh gosh, sorry, folks. Whew. I don't always know what that looks like. And I think I do. I mean, I know I'm asked to be tolerant and kind and things, but I don't always know what's gonna show up. Oh, sorry. Thank you. Anyway. I will tell, I'll do a side story for a second. It'll help me regroup. When I, in January of 2020, I had a heart attack. And it was because I'm so special. It was a weird kind of heart attack where my artery ripped. It wasn't from the blockages and stuff. And so, anyway, they had to move pretty fast. I was awake. I'm sure they had to have given me something to numb up because I don't remember being in pain. And I was on the table and seemingly, and I could see everything. They had screens. It was really interesting, actually. And they're peeling stuff off. And all of a sudden, everything got very quiet in my space. And I said, well, okay, God, am I right with the world? And I tease with some of my home group members and things is, I don't know what I would have said if I would have heard. New, no. But I had this feeling of, yeah, like you've told people you love that you love them. Whew. And you've tried to right your wrongs, and I do that on a continual basis, by the way. Anyway, and so I said, all right, let's roll. And everything did what it did. Well, anyway. When I came out the other side of that, the only thing that made sense to me was to be useful to other people. So when I have my conscious contact in the morning, I always ask to be useful and to give me the courage because some things that I'm asked to do, I don't particularly like. I'm glad God has a sense of humor. Because we have pretty vivid discussions about some of the things. And so, anyway, I find great peace in the 11th step. And I'm glad it didn't come earlier because my juvenile prayers, sobriety juvenile prayers were very much still give me, give me, give me, or bartering. I was a good negotiator. That was the other thing. I did it when I was drinking. I done it in sobriety. I'll do this if you do that. And so I'm glad that the 11th step is where it is because by the time I got there, I was really ready to have that integrated in my life on a regular basis. And then the 12th step might seem pretty obvious, but I want to talk about it a little differently for just a minute. Ooh, and I know I'll get teary over this one. I have had the privilege, breathe, Monique. I have had the privilege of experiencing you all's 12th step this year. Because it's not just about sponsoring, though I love my sponsees. Yeah, I just love my sponsees. And it's not just about that. It's been 2 months since I lost. I didn't lose him. He died on the couch since my husband died. And that brings its own sorrow. But what brought me great joy and continues to bring me great joy is I have a group of people that are the most perfect misfits. Like, I don't ever feel on the outside looking in. I mean, ever. I know if I'm in public, even if we don't talk or say anything about AA, there's that like little nod or sometimes a wink or a hug. Or and at the visitation, you know, we had like 140 people that night come to the visitation, and then of course the funeral the next day, and I looked out and I saw my misfits sprinkled everywhere. And it just was a feeling of like, you know what? I'm going to be okay. I am okay. And when I cry, it's not because I'm looking for a drink. You know, I don't have to manufacture being sad and, oh, what a great excuse to drink. I'm crying because it's a sad situation. So it's appropriate. But I also pull my strength from those who have gone through this in the program as well. So when I said that I look to restore my sanity, there are days when this happens that it feels very insane. But I say a little prayer and I don't take a drink and I go to a meeting. So, okay. I forgot to introduce myself. My name is Monique Bennett. I am an alcoholic and I'm sober today. So the last thing I'll ask of anyone who cares to do it, to think about it, is I got here on somebody's moment of silence. I did not want to be here. I didn't want to be the drunk under the bridge, which I wasn't. And I wasn't the lady having booze delivered to the house, but boy, I could drink with the best of them and justify it and love it. And it was easier to divorce my first husband than it was to give up the bottle. I mean, really. And so today I try to offer my moment of silence just out there. You know, when we say, God bless you, when we say the sick and still suffering, they're out there. I've got some in my family. You know, some of us do. But they're out there, and it might be that it just lands on fertile ground that day. And when I said yes to that nurse in the hospital, I didn't know that was going to be my day. It's probably good. I probably would have drank myself to death the night before. But I got here on someone's moment of silence. So if that strikes you, you know, maybe consider giving your moment of silence to another sick and suffering alcoholic. And that's it. I love you guys.